Very happy to have with us now for our alumni spotlight, Matt Barr, 9-year kicker for the Browns in a long and illustrious NFL kicking career. Matt, welcome to the show.
It's great memories from being in Cleveland through the 80s.
Yeah, that was a long time. That was a run in a career that, you know, saw other stops in places like Pittsburgh and New York with the Giants. But the Browns were very much a defining part of your career.
No question. And I went through a lot of errors, or at least two very distinct errors, the Sam Artigliano and then the Marty Schottenheimer. And I have to say it was really one of my favorite times, because if you talk about a family atmosphere, a lot of teams pay lip service to that, but with Cleveland, it really was a great camaraderie, and I think it had to do with Brian Seif being the leader of that early team. He would almost require guys to go out together and socialize, and it was really, really great fun, and I immediately felt welcome when I got there.
And it's interesting you say that, too, as a kicker. A kicker's an extremely important part, we know, of the success or the opposite of that for a football team. We know what it's meant for the Browns to have a reliable guy like Phil Dawson kicking for them now and when they had you there. But often in football, the kickers aren't always the guys that get welcome into the, you know, into the sort of mass, the normal fray. They're the kickers and everybody else is a position guy. How did you manage that whole thing where you were as accepted as any other, quote, position player?
Well, I think first it was, there was also a transition time among football positions itself. More and more specialists were coming into being at that point. You had your kickoff returner, you had your punt returner, you had your nickelback and things of that nature, where there were more and more individual positions. That being said, kicking is unique to football in that I grew up as a soccer player.
Right, right.
And to really define it, I would have hated to have played a 90-minute soccer game and have some guy come in who hasn't played 5 seconds and decide whether I'm going home a winner or a loser. That being said, you know, if football wants to change the rules, I would understand why, to eliminate the importance of kickers, because I don't think the founders ever intended to have kicking be such a prominent role.
Right, right. Yeah.
But it is. Having said that, I tried to be a part of the team. I would help out in practice, run routes for the receivers, for the DBs, or just fill in wherever I could. And I also jumped in on tackles whenever I could. It wasn't kick off and run off the field and hide. That kind of came from the Steeler days, I hate to say, because I would have not wanted to come to the sideline and face Jack Lambert or a mean Joe Green and say, I didn't want to get hurt, that's why I didn't jump in on the tackle.
Yeah, you couldn't
they
get
would have killed me there and then.
Could not have, that's right. You could not have gotten away with that. And it was such an interesting career path for you because, again, you played professional soccer, Colorado Caribous, Tulsa Roughnecks, Pennsylvania Stoners, 78 to 79, before you end up with your first NFL team, the Steelers, in 79. Of course, that was after an outstanding career in a soccer career, football career at Penn State. But when we think about your run and how really how blessed you were, Matt, to not only have been in the league as long as you were, but to have walked away from it with two Super Bowl rings, one that you got with the Steelers and then later with the Giants. And you were very much a part of those, as you said, because, yeah, the Jack Lamberts and Mean Joe Greens get the bulk of, and Terry Bradshaw get the bulk of the attention for doing what they did to get that to win those games. But ultimately, points had to be produced when a defensive-driven team kept the score low. And, it was up to you to produce them.
Sure. Well, you have to understand, I was just a dumbass rookie with the Steelers, and I didn't realize how good that team was until I left. And they won kind of when they wanted to win. It was a strange sensation. So winning the Super Bowl was like, yeah, that's great. You know, that's really nice. I know the neatest thing, or the thing that really made me smile and laugh, and I said, this is great, was when I saw myself on a bubblegum card for the first time. You know, the ring was nice, but boy, I'm on a card. I flipped right. cards when I was a kid. This is great.
The ring was nice, but the card was better. Nice.
At that point. And then with in the 80s with the Browns, we were a terrific team. Now, I don't know. I think we made the playoffs six times, the three championship games, of course. And it made me realize how very difficult it is to not only get into the Super Bowl, but win the Super Bowl. And it doesn't diminish the fact that they were terrific teams, really, really good teams. But you needed to have a fumble bounce your way or do something extra during the game to find a way to win that championship game.
Right.
And the stars have to be aligned. So when, and it was Bud Carson's second year, I think, when he fired me. After I think we were a 12-4 team and we lost in the championship game or something similar, you know, that was a tough year for the Browns, and I'm going, yeah, what am I going to do now? And the Giants called, and I felt that I didn't have anything left to prove, but what do you have to lose also? It's kind of fun putting yourself at risk again.
Sure.
And the Giants, it was kind of a miracle year. We were the underdogs against San Francisco, the underdogs against the Bills, and we won both those games. And then it made me appreciate the ring, my first ring as a rookie, that much more.
Matt Barr is with us, former Browns kicking standout, joining us on our alumni spotlight on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Yeah, that giant story of the 1990 season, so special. First of all, you go ahead and set an NFC Championship game record with the five field goals, including the 42-yarder as time expires, to beat the 49ers, a 15-13 game advance to Super Bowl 25, and then you get there in that incredible Super Bowl, which has been talked about recently, of course, with the passing of Whitney Houston, because she sang that incredible national anthem that I never forget being there in Tampa Stadium. I was covering the Bills at the time, and how riveting that performance was, and the emotion, the Gulf War as a backdrop, and all those things that you remember. And lo and behold, as much as I was covering that, Matt, obviously from a Buffalo perspective, so the Scott Norwood's miss was the story, and probably still the lingering story of a 20-19 Bills loss. But it was a 20-19 Giants victory for you guys, and you kicked what ultimately was the decisive field goal in that game. Probably not appreciated enough for that, because all the focus was on your counterpart's miss from 47 yards.
There's part of that, but that was one of, as you know, that was one of the truly great games. Every play was important, every tackle. The thing I'm most proud of is not the field goal with a minute or so left, but the I made two tackles in that game.
That's right.
And I led both special teams in tackles. So it was like, this is really cool.
Right.
I don't know. It was... You hate to see anything diminished to one sentence. It was a fun game, both of those games. Every play was important. So many different players came up with so many different big plays on both sides of the ball. And to have it reduced to the kick that was missed, I understand the reason for it. It's easier copy. But it diminishes so many great roles played by so many people in that game.
Thurman Thomas,
what a running game he had that game.
He was amazing. And Otis Anderson, of course, for his part, and gets MVP, because he was – it would have been, I think, Thurman's to win if they win the game. But Otis was the guy, because I remember the ballots as they were being, you know, accumulated in the press box, and how – and, of course, everybody was hanging on to decide at the – you know, which couldn't be decided until those final seconds who would get the MVP. But I want to ask you, as a fellow kicker, did you feel some level of empathy for Scott Norwood at all?
Oh, absolutely. When we had kicked the field goal in San Francisco, and we were flying right from San Francisco to Tampa because it was a short week because of the war, I was asked by numerous times by the press, "Do you hope the Super Bowl comes down to a field goal?" And I'm saying, "Hell no! You know, I want to be ahead by 3 or 4 touchdowns. I want to enjoy the day. Why would anybody in their right mind want to have a game come down to a last-second field goal? You know, that's nerve-wracking."
Right.
And all week, Scott answered the question the other way. Yes, I hope it does come down to a field goal.
Right.
And he was pushing, by my vision, it looked like he had been pushing everything during the game. It was a long field goal on grass and a lot of different things going on. And I remember thinking, I'm pretty sure he's going to miss this, but I'm hoping that something else happens. Like there's a fumble, there's an interception, a bad snap, a bad hold, something where he's not going to have to take the heat, because you recognize, you know, the Bill Bruckner situation,
sure,
where a whole career is reduced to one incident. And that's a shame, too, because Scotty's a good guy and a good kicker and made the most of abilities through the year.
And as you look at this current Browns team and this current league, Matt, and how important special teams continue to be, a league where, yeah, there's a lot of headlines for quarterbacks throwing for thousands of yards and having big games. And that headline going into Super Bowl 46 was that of a couple of quarterbacks who were very prolific. But ultimately, it was still defense that ruled the day there. It came down to those final seconds. And though it was
special teams plays that decided who was going into the Super Bowl.
And that was going to mention that, is that, you know, the Ravens kicker, Billy Cundiff, making the big miss. And then we saw what happened, and the big miss, of course, against New England. And then we saw what happened in that Giants game against the 49ers, where, yeah, special teams were critical there. So for you,
poor punt returner, my goodness, I think he was getting death threats.
He was, yeah.
It's still a game. No one dies. This is not South American soccer.
So
that's ridiculous.
But what's your level of appreciation for it now as really, you know, again, a pioneer guy coming out of Penn State and really being one of the defining soccer style kickers, in this league?
As I said, the amount of work that now goes into it, ironically enough, the snapper for the Giants was my snapper's son.
Yep.
Steve Diossi and Zach Diossi.
Yep. I know Steve well and Zach well. Yep.
A long thing. And what's interesting is now there are guys in the league who are just there for long snapping. And the amount of perfection that Steve was, I think, one of the first ones to be able to do this, but he snapped the ball with the laces up 9 out of 10 times. It was amazing. And he said it goes 3.5 rotations, and if a different holder was holding, he would adjust the ball so that holder who caught it at a different spot would get the ball with the laces up, which makes the operation that much more perfect. To me, it's just stunning how good the operation is, how effective it is. And it certainly, with the fields getting better, one of the things about Municipal Stadium is that was always an adventure.
Yes.
You had the infield sometimes resodded, sometimes sanded. It would be frozen on one end, muddy on the other, and sandy in the middle. It was a lot of fun kicking there, in that there was so much history in that building. Loved it. Absolutely loved walking down the tunnel that Lou Groza and Otto Graham and Marion Motley and Dante Gluefingers Lavelli walked through. It's like, what a part of history this is, and I enjoyed it so much. And I think that gets lost sometimes when the new cathedrals get built.
That's such a great point. Is it the tradition, the history? By the way, we should also let people know you are involved in audio engineering And I know this is probably a little more complicated to talk about than maybe football would be, but in a nutshell, the business you're in utilizes the unused frequencies, the analog frequencies that have now gone to digital but are still alive as frequencies, and you're putting those, your company's putting those to good use in many different platforms.
But we're trying to get started. The FCC hasn't really set the rules yet on what you can do. The only rule that they set is that these unused frequencies will stay unlicensed, and that's a big part of it. So it's a little cart before the horse, but I have fun doing it in electronics. I was an electrical engineer at Penn State, and my kids thought it was great when I told them you can't spell geek without a double E.
Very nice. That sums it up perfectly. Well, Matt, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We love visiting with you, and I know we'll do it again down the road, my friend.
And say hello to all my former teammates up there, Puzz and Scotty and the whole crew that I know are very active in the Cleveland area, Hanford and all the rest of the guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
He is Matt Barr, former Browns kicking great, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford and brought to you by Madden NFL 12 in stores now. EA Sports, it's in the game.